Good morning, Nashville. Welcome to the Michelle Knezovic Show. I'm Michelle Knezovic. We've got Jared Cassidy with us behind the board from the Hillside Game Studios here in Nashville today. Jared, I feel like so much has happened since last Saturday. I was in Atlanta for SEC Media Days. Training camp is around the corner. We had some Predators news. So today on the show, we're pretty much going to recap every little bit of it. But first off, Jared, how are we doing today?
Great. How are you?
You know, doing good. Feels good to be back in Nashville. But you know what feels better? That football season is upon us. Man. SEC Media Days in Atlanta these last couple days. Caroline Fenton and I were down there hosting Stillman & Company from 2 to 6 every day. Got to talk to a lot of coaches, hear from a lot of coaches, hear from the commissioner, hear from players, Tennessee players, Vanderbilt players, and kind of just this ever-evolving world of college football. And this year, a lot of the conversation was surrounding not which quarterback battle is going to be the most intense, who's going to win the SEC this year, who's going to win the East, who's going to win the West. Who won in the transfer portal, but a lot of it surrounded, you know, conference realignment, name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, Saban and Jimbo's little beef they had not too long ago, which we're going to talk about in the next segment around 9:15. But as we do every Saturday morning, we will get into the SEC a little bit later, but grab your coffee. We're going to do your morning brew. These are all the headlines that you need to know if you are a Nashville sports fan. It'll help you, conversation starter. We like to do this every Saturday morning if you've never listened to the show before. And basically just give you everything you need to know in the world of Nashville and some national headlines as well. So first, the Predators sign Nino Niederreiter. That is a tongue twister. So they got their forward. This happened on Thursday, and then there was a lot of conversation surrounding would the Preds go a little bit further and try to make a big signing in Matthew Tkachuk. But if you were on Twitter last night or you were following any NHL free agency news, Calgary traded him to Florida. So unfortunately for Predators fans, that is not going to be an option. We talked a lot about it on pretty much all of the shows all last week because there was rumors that maybe the Predators could make a move for him. Matthew Tkachuk said that Nashville would be a place that he would like to go to. So, I mean, if you look at it from the standpoint of David Poile, right, you sign Nino. He is your, I think, second-line winger is probably where he'll end up, but obviously there's room for movement. You get another powerful guy on offense. He was with the Carolina Hurricanes last year. Had about 44 points last season. I think about 24 goals, 20 assists to get those 44 points. So he's another solid guy you can add to the roster. And if you look at the Predators, all of their moves that they've made so far in the offseason, first one being adding Ryan McDonagh to the team. Jared and I talked a lot about that. We talked a lot about that on how the move might have gone under the radar a little bit just because it was around the same time we were trying to figure out if they were going to re-sign Philip Forsberg. So when the news broke on the show, we were talking about Ryan McDonagh, and then we were like, oh, just kidding, got to pivot. They re-signed Philip Forsberg, which was the next move. So signing Forsberg keeps you not getting worse, basically. Keeps you at the same level of play. But then adding Ryan McDonagh, you're definitely going to get better on the defensive side of things. And now you sign Nino, which is another powerful scorer, winger, for the Predators, but unfortunately not going to go full go-for-it mode and sign Matthew Tkachuk. He obviously went to Florida, and that the Predators wouldn't have been able to offer as much as Florida did for him. So, Jared, what did you think about the addition of Nino to the Predators roster?
I think it's huge. Obviously working a lot of these Preds games here that I have to write his name a lot when he scores goals against us. So now I don't have to do it when he's scoring against us. He will hopefully be scoring for us. I think it does improve our forward depth a little bit more, obviously. Not getting Tkachuk was a big deal, but Robbie Stanley said it the best. They just didn't have any. They didn't have the package to offer him unless you were going to give up a lot. And Florida actually gave up a lot. Giving up Huberto is not easy for them. So
we'll
see how this turns out for them. But they did lose some good people on their team as well. So I think that obviously getting Nino Ryder is a big piece to this puzzle. I still think that we have the cap room that we can make some more moves, maybe bring in some more people behind us, get some more depth in the forward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if they do decide to keep the cap and let's roll and see if somebody decides to trade something halfway through the season or so, it appears that that's the way that we're going, and that's fine if you want to see what you have because you did add some pieces. And obviously, like you said, we kept Forsberg. That was a big deal.
Huge.
That was the number one piece to this offseason was to do that. The other was to improve both your defense and your forwards, and you did that, but maybe not to our liking that we wanted.
Of course, and if you're going to sign Matthew Tkachuk, like we said, you have to be willing to give up a lot. He had over 100 points last year for Calgary. Calgary also lost Johnny Gaudreau, over 100 points. So, I mean, Calgary is in big trouble losing both of those guys, your two best players on the team. If you have any thoughts on the addition of Nino to the Preds, text us, call us, 615-737-1025, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Weigh in on the conversation. What other moves do you think the Preds could make? Do you think that they could keep the cap space as we move into the season, kind of like what Jared said, and maybe make a trade later on? More headlines, though. Switching to the NFL, we're going to take a look at, you know, the big picture. We've got training camp coming up next week, specifically here in Nashville. Mike Vrabel and John Robinson will be speaking to the media Tuesday at 11:30. So we'll have all the coverage on pretty much all of our shows. What are the biggest storylines heading into training camp? You know, Treylon Burks is going to be a huge person to watch in training camp because of everything surrounding what was going on with him in OTAs and rookie minicamp. Couldn't really see him stay on the field consistently. Also, a lot of people are going to be really interested in seeing Malik Willis out there. How does he perform? How has he progressed in the little time that he's been in Nashville? I know a lot of people are going to want to see the reps that he has out there. We also, in Atlanta this week, got to talk to Roger McCreary. He was the second-round draft pick for the Tennessee Titans. He's a cornerback, came from Auburn, and it was really funny, Jared. So he is now the spokesperson for Bush Beans, and they're the official baked beans of the SEC. So Roger was doing interviews during SEC media days in Atlanta, and he gave everybody a huge can of Bush Beans, and they say Rogers Beans, and it has a big SEC logo on it.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
And fun fact about him, he actually eats 2 full plates of baked beans before every single football game.
It's weird. I wonder, did you ask him if it was like a superstition that he has, or if it's just like, you know, something that he's just like, I don't know, feel comfortable, like a comfort food, you know? I mean, a lot of players in random sports do weird things like that.
Although, he didn't necessarily say it was a superstition, but he said that he's just been doing it ever since he was a little boy, playing like peewee football all the way up. And actually, his nutritionist at Auburn, where he played in college, was able to like work beans into their meals. And she's actually with the Tennessee Titans now. So he said he was very excited about that. But yeah, I guess it's just a ritual he does before every single game. And it is very fitting now that he is the face of Bush Beans.
I was about to say, it worked out pretty well for him to enjoy the beans.
Exactly. And we talked to him a lot, right? We asked him about Treylon Burks this week, and he said that in practice, he is the main guy who's covering Treylon. And we talked about, you know, a lot of people said, is he overweight? Is he going to be prepared for training camp? And Roger said that, you know, I push that guy every single day in practice. I think his skill set will transfer to the NFL. But now it's just kind of a waiting game to see how he is in training camp and if we will see him on the field. Because if not, you're going to be very worried if you are a Tennessee fan. So all eyes will be on him, Malik Willis, and then, of course, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, all the other big names on the Titans. Kyler Murray, young quarterback in the league, signs a huge contract with the Arizona Cardinals. $230.5 million with $105 million guaranteed. I was floored when I saw that. We all heard the drama surrounding his name earlier this year, taking all the Arizona Cardinals stuff off of his Instagram and making a statement, I guess you could say, and chatter surrounding that he wanted a new contract, even though he's only 23 or 24. I think he's 24 years old, and he is so, you know, young in the league. We haven't even really seen anything from him. So for Arizona, I mean, I guess Arizona knows he's their guy, but if you are a Lamar Jackson fan, if you're a Joe Burrow fan, if you're a Justin Herbert fan, you're looking at that contract. I mean, what is Joe Burrow going to get paid? He just took his team to the Super Bowl. So if you're a young quarterback in the league, that's definitely very promising for you. He'll get 12.7 cap this year, 16 million cap next year, and then in 2024, he'll get paid more than $50 million. So that is a huge contract for Kyler Murray. Like I said, Titans training camp begins Tuesday. Vrabel and Robinson will speak to the media on Tuesday, 11:30. And then lastly, we're going to round out with the SEC. We heard from every single SEC coach this week in Atlanta. I got to talk to some specifically. And how do these coaches feel about all these changes in college football? On the other side, we're going to hear from Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, on what they think the college football landscape could look in the future and how NIL is either helping or hurting college football. You're listening to the Michelle Knezevic Show on 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app.
And you've read about them. You know who they are.
Network when you're done. There ain't a better university in this country. Two slice bread. It does piss me off.
And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team. Made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
You ever been to a game here? You ever come to school here and see the education? You ever talk about the 12th man, the Aggie Network when you're done? There ain't a better university in this country. And it's insulting to what you say. And all these, and we got writers who have said it and done it off sliced bread. A guy named Sly who made it up. Love to see who sliced bread is and put it out there with sliced bread. Let me find out where it comes from. And then to have coaches in our league and across this league to say it, clown acts. All right? Irresponsible as hell. Multiple coaches in our league. And the guy's griping about NIL, griping about transfer portal, using it the most and bragging about it the most. That's the ironic part. You want character? I'll take it with any of y'all. It's a joke. It does piss me off.
And that was Jimbo Fisher, and Nick Saban was pissing him off a little bit. That was about a month ago. The two had a little bit of a back and forth rivalry about NIL, the changes in college football, what the collective is doing for certain programs. And of course, that was a big topic heading into SEC Media Day this week. Welcome back into the Michelle Knezevic Show. I'm Michelle Knezevic. We got Jared Cassidy on the board here. You're listening to The Game on 102.5, 106.3, The Game Nashville app. We are also streaming on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. And Jared, I want to get into this a little bit. So that was a couple months ago. Nick Saban, what started it was Nick Saban was speaking to a group of people, a group of potential donors, potential people who could help a collective at Alabama, and essentially saying how Texas A&M got the number one recruiting class, and saying how, I don't remember his exact words in that sound clip, but how other schools essentially aren't using it in the way that you should be. But let's remember, there are no rules with this NIL and the collective and using it to recruit players now. And then Jimbo clapped back and said that they're not cheating. And essentially it created this whole feud. SEC Media Days came along. They both were asked about it. They both said, you know, we're fine. They obviously got heated in the moment. So when you listen to those two sound clips, it makes you think that Nick Saban isn't really for NIL. But then if you know the people that he's speaking to, he's kind of saying, okay, well, we need to step our game up and we need to make sure that we are better than Texas A&M. At least that's the way that I read between the lines. This was Nick Saban this week at SEC Media Days speaking on NIL and the ever-changing world of college football.
You know, name, image, and likeness is a great thing for players, and I'm all for players having the opportunity to create whatever value they can create for themselves. And, you know, our players did extremely well last year. I think they made over $3 million in name, image, and likeness. And but I do think that the concerns are, you know, there has to be something, some guidelines that sort of protect competitive balance, you know, in how we do this. And, you know, the advent of collectives has created a way for, you know, third parties to make contributions to marketing organizations who can create opportunities for players, which I think is a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Creates opportunities for players. That's a good thing. I think when it's used in recruiting and players start making choices and decisions based on promises that are made in name, image, and likeness, I'm not sure that is a good thing. So I do think there needs to be some guidelines, you know, in that. And I think there needs to be transparency and, you know, how all that's done.
So that was Nick Saban earlier this week at SEC Media Days in Atlanta talking about name, image, and likeness. And Nick Saban, he's just always recruiting, isn't he, Jared?
Constantly.
Isn't he? The slight flex of, yeah, I think our players made about $3 million in NIL deals last year. And if you're an 18-year-old and you hear that, I mean, obviously Bama to play at Alabama is already a hot ticket enough. But when you have this aspect of the collective and name, image, and likeness and these huge, huge contracts and huge sums of money, it makes it a little bit more competitive between a Texas A&M, between an Alabama, between a Jimbo and a Saban. But I want to dive into, you know, what will this college football, what will the future of college football look like? And a lot of the conversations I mentioned before at SEC Media Days were on name, image, and likeness, and how does the NCAA go back and make a set of rules, make a set of regulations after it's already been a year under our belt? And I know that you can go back as a governing body and you can adjust things, you can make regulations, you can make rules, but right now it's kind of sink or swim, and everybody's just out on their own figuring out how they can make money, figuring it out what works best for their schools. I spoke with Mike Wright, the quarterback of Vanderbilt, and he said that Vanderbilt has a whole department that educates them on name, image, and likeness and how they can get deals and how they can work with companies within Nashville. And then spoke with Hendon Hooker, quarterback of Tennessee, and Cedric Tillman. They were just in New York City in Times Square meeting with large companies, Fortune 500 companies, about educating them on name, image, and likeness and how they can get deals, but how you also have to be responsible too. And so at the end of the day, these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, and not all of them have agents, right? These are huge deals that some of them will be signing, and especially in college football at the highest level, big deals with a lot of money and a lot of, I guess you could say, things on the line for them. Because if you don't have somebody look over a contract like that, like at the end of the day, what these schools need to do is make sure that they're protecting their student athletes. But I want to ask you this, Jared. We talked a lot about it this week. And how do they come up with a solution? How do you set a rule? How do you set regulations? And what do they do? I mean, one of the scary things just for college football as a sport in general, a lot of people talked about a CBA. But, okay, when that happens, do the students become employees of the university? And then this isn't college football anymore. These are professional athletes.
Yeah, it appears that it's going more to a professional style, and even in the college ranks, which in some aspects I'm okay with. But you can't give, I just think you can't give all the power to the player because obviously they're playing for the university. Even if they're being paid from somebody outside the university, they're still representing that university. It just brings in a lot of different loopholes, and it's hard to really think that, I mean, that it's going to stay the same. I think, honestly, that everything's going to change with college football, and I know that's broad, but, I mean, like, we could see the SEC having more teams. We could see them stay packed. We could see, you know, we've already seen teams or conferences join up or say they're going to join. You know, obviously a big domino, too, Notre Dame. What are they going to do? I saw where they're asking for I forget the exact amount of money. I'll try to find it. To NBC so that they can remain independent.
I think it's $70 million.
Yeah, which is just crazy. I mean, but they've been on NBC forever, and that's why they stay independent. It's just going to be wild. I think we're going to see the end of them playing like FCS opponents. I think it's going to be more like high profile games, even if it's, you know, have a bit down year, the names will still mean more. I just think that we'll see a lot of those, and man, who knows? It is just going to be crazy. This season will help us, but still with no governing body of any kind of NIL, it seems like a little chaos can erupt at any time.
And that was one of the main points, at least from a majority of the coaches this week, of there's no set of rules, so anything is fair game. And don't get me wrong, I'm not naive to the fact that I know that a lot of these collectives were going on before, and payers,
100%.
Players were getting paid to go to these universities, but if a coach had a problem about it, they would call up the other coach. Or all of these conversations that we're seeing kind of hit the surface now were behind closed doors, and they can talk about it freely now. And Lane Kiffin said, you know, it makes it an unfair advantage. You think of a Tennessee, right? And we all know the Nico Amalavea, who is the young star quarterback that will be going to Tennessee in a couple years, the $8 million deal, right? $2 million each year for the 4 years, obviously. If he only stays and goes to the NFL, it'll only be $6 million for 3 years at Tennessee. But a lot of people say, okay, well, Tennessee's a bigger SEC school. They have bigger donors. Now we need to step up our donors. And it becomes such a business of buying these recruits. Or, okay, you sit in a recruiting meeting with a coach and it's like, the question has to come up if you need to do what's best for your family, that's best for you. And don't get me wrong. If you're an athlete, you go get your bag, because I know how much money that these TV contracts are bringing in for college football, for athletic departments. You're also helping keep these other Olympic smaller sports alive for these universities. A women's soccer, a women's volleyball, a women's basketball. You're allowing these other sports, these other kids to play college athletics because your sport revenues so much money. Lane Kiffin had some interesting comments on it. He specifically said cheating, but hasn't college football always been at an unfair advantage when you're recruiting for an Alabama or when you're recruiting for an SEC school over most schools in the country? So what could we see college football look like moving forward? Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Are we just in the thick of it right now? All that on the other side. You're listening to 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app.
With everything that's going on surrounding college athletics, college football, do you feel like things are trending to a better place or a worse place, generally speaking, for the sport?
Too early to tell. Because right now what we have is unsustainable. There will be changes. We're probably in the biggest transition period that we've been in since I've been coaching. You know, I mean, shoot, changing everything. We've got realignment going on. We got playoff talk going on. We've got, unmitigated free agency and bidding wars. Exactly what the basketball guys and everybody else said not to get into. Well, we're in the middle of bidding wars. We coach the athletes that have more privileges than any other professional sport, probably in the history of the world. And then, but something will change. I don't know what it'll be. I mean, being a professional is not all privilege and no responsibility. And I do think getting, if everybody got on the same page, they could find a relatively easy solution. The most difficult thing is getting everybody on the same page, I think.
That was Mike Leach, head coach of Mississippi State at SEC Media Days this week, speaking on just the changes in college football. Is it good? Is it bad? And his answer was, I don't know right now. And I think that was honestly one of the biggest takeaways that I could take from SEC Media Days this past week was we interviewed so many people, and from players to coaches to college football analysts to former players to the commissioner. And the biggest takeaway is, I mean, maybe other than the commissioner, because he probably knows so much that we don't know, but nobody knows what college football is going to look like. Nobody knows if this is good. Nobody knows if this is bad. Nobody knows what regulations could look like, other than you would hope the commissioner, or you would hope somebody in the NCAA offices who have totally just taken a back seat. Mark Emmert peaced out after NIL became legal, and now you can't make a cap because the Supreme Court already said that that would be against antitrust laws. So where do we go from here? Mike Leach seemed to think that, it could be an easy solution. He didn't say what, but also too, Mike Leach, probably the best press conference ever. Talked about Buffaloes and his homie grew up in Wyoming. Just so hilarious.
Yeah, I'm totally down for anything that that man says. I literally just said that to Ryan back here. I said, man, this guy is great. He's just, his responses, but I mean, his response to that question though, just like what we just talked about in the last segment, I mean, something's going to change. Nobody, like, he's a coach. He's a football coach in the SEC. He doesn't know what's going to happen.
Well, and I really appreciate Mike Leach's comments there, because it could have been really easy to say, you know what, this is bad, this is cheating with the collective, and it's an unfair advantage. But he was very candid in his response to say, you know, we're trying to navigate this just like everybody from the outside looking in is trying to figure out how all of this works as well. I mentioned before, you can't have a cap, because if you have a cap, then it violates antitrust laws. That was in the Supreme Court case ruling. Some people say a CBA. If you were to go that route, which Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports, he's the head college football writer for CBS Sports. We interviewed him earlier this week, and that was an option that he threw out there. But this is what you need to remember. If you go the CBA route, that means that they would be employees of the university. So those huge TV deals and those huge TV contracts, you would have to divide and give money to the players for those. And we all know that that's not going to happen. Or at least from college administrators, they don't want that to happen. But then I take it a step further. If that were to happen, that money and that revenue helps fund every other sport in that athletic department. That helps fund a women's field hockey, a women's soccer, men's soccer, because so few sports are revenue sports. Football is almost a guaranteed for places. That'll be a revenue sport. Sometimes men's basketball. And then I know some men's hockey teams, especially in the Northeast, are revenue sports. But for the most part, that one sport allows every other sport to be played at that university. Obviously, there's other ways that they make money in these athletic departments. But it is such a big money, like bringing in money for the school, so that if a CBA were to come about, we could see, I mean, would they branch off into their own league of its own? Would they completely branch off from college athletics? That could be an option. Could we see an actual minor league? And I know this sounds so incredibly far-fetched, but a takeaway from this week is it's probably not, considering all the changes. And this is the most player empowerment we have seen in, first off, college athletics. I think Mike Leach's words were, these players have the most influence or are the most privileged players in the world. So what could we see moving forward? If you have a thought, text in on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com, 615-737-1025. I threw out this idea. What if players weren't allowed to make money until they signed their letter of intent or until they were able to get their money for their books, their room and board, so they were actually on the campus? And maybe you could take out the aspect of using that money to recruit as much, because we mentioned before, the money's been there. We're just talking about it now. But then you bring in a whole nother can of worms of each state has different laws on this. So when you're an 18-year-old and you're looking at different schools, you need to take that into account. So how is there some sort of law or regulation that can account for every single state? Because right now it's all individual. So Nico Amalavea, who's coming to Tennessee, he lives in California. So those are going to be different laws than another state, say Tennessee. So there's so many different layers to this. There's so many different loopholes to this, because you can say, well, I'm not paying a player to come to Tennessee, but I'm going to pay him $2 million to come on my podcast. And there's a loophole. There's a backdoor. So what do we do? I think that the market right now is so high for these players. These local businesses are investing so much in these players. You're seeing different athletes represent national brands, represent local brands, especially, we'll take Knoxville, for example. A lot of local businesses. I'm sure everybody wants Hendon Hooker to represent their brand. He's a celebrity. You go to Lexington, Kentucky, Will Levis, starting quarterback. I already know, just because I follow them a lot and I know a lot of the local businesses, everybody wants him to represent their brand, because in these small SEC cities, it is fully surrounded by a Tennessee football, fully surrounded by a Kentucky football. They want these players to represent their brand. But when do we switch into not seeing the return from these companies, right? Right now, it's, we need to get the player, we need to pay this person. But in a couple years, when you continue to do that, and say your school keeps losing, are they really getting that much turn of investment, or are they essentially just paying this player because you're the quarterback and they want to win so bad? Do we think that the market will kind of just fizzle out? Because right now we are at the top of it and they are just throwing money around to these players. Because what happens if the quarterback's a bust? What happens if he's a five-star? What happens if Nico's a bust at Tennessee, Jared? You're a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, I mean, it could obviously be really bad. I almost think that there has to be kind of like, look, no legal background or anything like this. I'm just saying, like, conservatorships, like, kind of would come in the key with this. It would almost be like a governing body for, like, the school or something like that to make those decisions. But you're right, but, like, what if he gets there and what if he's terrible?
The amount of five, there was, Elijah had brought up a really great stat when we were talking. I don't know it off the top of my head. I can look it up, but it was some crazy stat surrounding five-star quarterbacks out of high school heading into college and how many actually are good, right? So, and actually make a difference in college football. And then it can be the same, I'm sure it's probably similar to how many quarterbacks are the best ever in college and then don't transition into the NFL because they're three different levels of football. But what happens if you know Tennessee fans are going to say, well, he's getting paid $8 million. He needs to perform. He needs to be good. And if he's not good, what happens? As a Tennessee fan, do you think that fans will bring that up and that'll be the main talking point? I mean, he's getting paid to be this good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if that happens, yeah, 100% people will say that. Vol's Twitter is diabolical. It's just the sewers of it is what it is. I don't see this happening. I don't think he'll be terrible. I mean, competition in quarterback rooms is great, right? It can move someone up. It can also move somebody down.
Mm-hmm.
So what if he gets there and somebody moves over him?
Joe Milton.
Right. So, I mean, but you gave him a contract for $2 million a year. Okay, that's fine. Just like NFL. Well, what happens if, okay, he leaves in his junior year? Okay, he's still $6 million. What if in his sophomore year that he passes him? Then what do? You know, I'm just saying, like, these players, like, they're going to have a lot of control on what they're going to do if there's not some kind of, like, governing body that's watching them and making their decisions for them. Not for them. That sounds bad because, obviously, mm-hmm. they're an individual. They can make their own decisions. But maybe to guide them in a certain
advising
way.
Advising them.
Right. Like, everybody has financial advisors. Like, even if you don't have, like, one that works for a company, your parents, your family, friends, whatever, you ask people questions, right? So, like, wouldn't you think that these kids that are signing these large deals will ask somebody or have somebody like, hey, I need you to make sure everything's on the up and up over here?
Mm-hmm. And I think that could be, I mean, I think we've seen it. I think, as I mentioned before, Mike Wright, starting quarterback at Vanderbilt, said that they have a department. I think a lot of it is going to be on the schools to hire a staff, hire a specific person. I know my former boss at Kentucky is on the men's basketball staff, and he handles that. He works with the players, but obviously a basketball team is a lot smaller than a football team. I think Kirby Smart said 95 of their players had NIL deals last year at the University of Georgia. So you have to be an adult early, right? When you're signing these deals, you need to be smart. And a lot of it, like you said, is going to be on the players. I think a lot of it should be on the schools to have people, to have resources, which I'm sure a lot of them do. But make sure that it also doesn't get in the way of playing, because I could very much see a collective or a donor or a company saying, well, we're paying all this money. Why isn't he playing? So it can be another form of just conflict of powers. It just brings a whole nother layer into college football being a business. It was a business before, but we're seeing a little bit more of it now because all of this is to the surface, because we do know that paying in college athletics was happening before. A lot of it was happening in football. And we know a past situation with Tennessee football, and the NCAA has released some of the allegations surrounding Tennessee football and Jeremy Pruitt. We're going to discuss those on the other side and what it means for the future of Tennessee football. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back into the Michelle Knezevic Show. Happy Saturday, everybody. Happy Saturday, Nashville. I'm Michelle Knezevic. We got Jared Cassidy loving that tune that he is playing right now. Just wanted to give an update on the University of Tennessee and the notice of allegations from the NCAA about the football program while under Jeremy Pruitt. So Friday, a release from UT, Pruitt and nine others. Obviously, they were fired in January of 2021. And this report goes in just to talk about that they spent nearly $60,000 in recruiting and extra benefits and bribes. And it just goes on to kind of go into detail about what all was done under Jeremy Pruitt. Basically, if I can just put a bow on this for you, they figured out that there was no what was the specific word you used, Jared?
Yeah, so Ryan Ryan McGee on Marty and McGee earlier said that there was, in the letter that was sent out, that there was no lack of institutional control, which means that Tennessee is not liable for it. So, you know, they still could come down with something for them, but it is not on the University of Tennessee. It's on Jeremy Pruitt and his staff that they found.
And obviously Tennessee has a completely different staff from them. All those coaches were fired. Jeremy Pruitt is now with the Giants, who the Tennessee Titans will see them in week one. So he will actually be in Tennessee. So if you're a Tennessee fan, you know, you have to feel somewhat relieved. I wasn't surprised that this, you know, will now probably go away and they won't have to worry about that. Just because you mentioned they fired him with cause. And the university isn't being punished because once they found out, they got him out of the program. On a lighter note for Tennessee, I was telling you, Jared, and we all know you love your Vols. They were a very, very hot topic during SEC Media Day. And a lot of people who cover the SEC, who cover college football, are really excited and very high on Tennessee. I mean, they finished with the bowl game last year, 7-6, but I will say, not all 7-6s are the same. They had a bunch of close games that really could have gone either way. I think of that Pitt game. I think of the Purdue Bowl game. And a couple other ones on there. But you saw a lot of promise from Josh Heupel in his first year at the helm of Tennessee. He also is one of the few coaches who has not had any big turnover on his coaching staff. He has a lot of returning players, including his starting quarterback, Hendon Hooker, who was a transfer from Virginia Tech, won the starting role halfway through the season over Joe Milton, and also star receiver Cedric Tillman, over 1,000 yards last year. So both of them came to SEC Media Day, both very well spoken, and I asked them, what can people expect from you guys this year? What is the identity and explosive plays? Last year, they averaged about, I think it was like 39.3 points a game. So they can get their defense just a little bit up to par. They keep those explosive plays. I mean, you know, I think the word they used was showtime. It's showtime, right? So you're going to get that offensive performance from them. You're going to see some big plays. And one of the biggest questions at SEC Media Week, when you do look at on-the-field stuff, none of the NIL or conference realignment, was who is the third best team in the SEC? Because you've got Alabama and Georgia at 1 and 2, or however you want to place them. But who is that third best team? I think we heard almost every single team named. We had a Texas A&M answer. We had a Kentucky answer. We had a Tennessee answer. We had a South Carolina answer. We had an Arkansas answer. I think a Mississippi State might have been in there. So when you look at, obviously the SEC is very top heavy. You've got Alabama and Georgia up there. But if you look at the entire SEC as a whole, it's really up for grabs. And I, of course, have to mention that Kentucky being my alma mater, people are very high on them this year. With Mark Stoops, you got Will Levis coming back at quarterback. They did have a big turnover with their offensive coordinator leaving and heading to the Rams, and Liam Cohen, who helped bring Will Levis here. But in trade for that, they got an offensive coordinator from the 49ers, who is now going to be on Kentucky's staff. He has helped develop quarterbacks in the NFL. So if you're Will Levis, the starting quarterback, that's very promising for him because he's obviously looking to take a step up. But Jared, if I ask you, who do you think could be, you know, a sleeper or the best team in the SEC? Not the best, sorry, the third best team in the SEC. I mean, as a Tennessee fan, is that exciting that you guys are getting more hype, right? You're bringing back that the football culture, just because you guys have been kind of irrelevant in the SEC comparative to what the team and the program was decades ago?
Oh, yeah. There's been some rough patches, rough couple of years. The Derek Dooley, the orange pants. A lot of, if this is a science experiment, a lot of failed science experiments. Last year proved a lot. I think that offense is explosive. They can do a lot. I would love to see the defense, like you said, just step it up a little bit. Tennessee's always had a pretty good running game. You know, we've had a lot of good running backs come through there. Still think we can stick with that. We can improve on our pass catching. I do think there is possibility. Another team I do think would be like Ole Miss. Ole Miss is on the other side, but teams like that, like I'm interested to see some more teams. I'm also interested in LSU. I just want to see what they do with Brian Kelly into their first year.
Yeah, I forgot to mention them. That they were another team that there's still kind of a question mark there, obviously, just because of the switchover of the head coach. But it's really up for anyone to try and compete for that third spot. I don't think that it won't be Alabama and Georgia in the SEC championship game just because of history with those two being in the finals, and they're so far above and top-heavy in the SEC. They're almost at a different tier than every other team. But as far as every other team in the SEC, I'm really excited to see all of these games this year, to see which team emerges and if anybody can give Georgia or Alabama a little run for their money. We will be talking SEC football, Tennessee Titans training camp, any moves that are happening from the Nashville Predators all week moving forward. Next week, we'll be a week under our belts for training camp. I know what we will have a lot to talk about on the Michelle Knezevic Show with Jared Cassidy. It has been a great Saturday morning talking some football, talking some hockey with you all. Can't wait to see you all back here 9 a.m. next Saturday. It's Michelle Knezevic Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.